What you see is what you get.
Hello, my name is Pastor Chris Miller, and I am your host on the PC Speaking Podcast, where we are equipping Christians for life. Hello, and welcome back to our second installment in the book of Jonah. I hope you've been having a great week, and this first week of your new year has been a good one. Last time we were together, we got to know Jonah a little bit better, what he'd been called to do and how he felt about that. I was, wasn't too keen, really. And we also talked about the fact that we all have a little bit of Jonah in us at times, which is a big part of what we're going to be talking about as we go through this book. We also talked about the Ninevites and why Jonah didn't want to go to Nineveh. And really, from our perspective, he had some pretty good reasons to not want to go there. The Assyrians were pretty terrible people, did some horrible things to the people that they conquered, oppressed. The way they treated them was quite horrific, actually. But God had called Jonah to go and preach to the Ninevites, the city of Nineveh, and tell them that he saw how wicked they were and to turn away from their wicked ways. And Jonah didn't want to do that. And as a result, he boarded a ship headed to Tarshish, and God hurled a storm on the sea. And that storm was so bad that the ship was in danger of breaking up. And that storm not only caught Jonah up in it, it caught the ship, all the goods on the ship, and the sailors on the ship as well. And like I said, Jonah had what most of us would consider pretty valid reasons for not wanting to go to Nineveh. And the problem with that is, though, is that God wanted him to go, and God knows better than Jonah does. But Jonah, unfortunately, trusted himself more than he trusted God. And he saw what he thought is right and good is more right than what God says is right and good. And that's a real problem when that happens. And ultimately, like so many other things, when we're in a situation like that, we need to ask ourselves, you know, who do I trust? Do I trust myself? Do I trust God? Am I right, or is God right? And today we're going to be looking at verses 5 through 10 of chapter 1 from the book of Jonah. So let's go ahead and read those. I don't know what platform you might be on listening to this, but if you're watching the video, sometimes the site that I use to broadcast can be a little bit stingy with the amount of video it will let me upload, so it kind of downgrades quality a bit. So if the quality is not that great, I apologize for that, but hopefully the audio is good. We are in Jonah chapter 1, and we're going to read verses 5 through 10. And here's what they say. It says, "Then the sailors were afraid, and each cried to his God. They tossed the ship's cargo into the sea in order to lighten the load. But Jonah had gone down into the hold of the ship, had lain down, and was fast asleep. The captain came to him and said, 'What are you doing asleep? Get up, call to your God. Perhaps your God will consider us so that we will not perish.' The sailors said one to another, 'Come, let us cast lots, that we may know on whose account this disaster has come upon us.' So they cast lots, and the lot fell on Jonah. Then the sailor said to Jonah, 'Tell us why this disaster has come upon us. What is your occupation? Where do you come from? What is your country? And from what people are you?' Jonah replied, 'I am a Hebrew, and I fear the Lord, the God of heaven, who made the sea and the dry land.' Then the men were very afraid and said to him, 'What is this you have done?' For the men knew that he was fleeing from the presence of the Lord, because he had told them." Well, we talked a little bit, maybe a lot bit, about racism last time we were together. And, you know, Jonah's attitude towards the Assyrians, a bit of racism there for sure. And I don't want to give anybody the wrong idea, of course, but I think that what people are prejudiced against today is not race or ethnicity, but what people are prejudiced against today, and this applies well, how would you say, there's no group immune to this, maybe. What people are prejudiced against today are things like worldviews and ideologies, against the way people think. And I think it's especially even true for those who tout the idea that the world is full of racists, because that's just not true. The reality is that there's just not that many racists in the world. I wouldn't say they don't exist at all, but the idea of racism in Western culture has received more attention than it deserves in the past several, well, recent years. And the way it's often thrown around seems to be counterproductive to solving any problems anyway. And personally, I don't know anybody who I would say is a racist. However, I do know many people who group people together by the way they think, and that's often done in a negative way. And you've probably heard one of the popular terms lately being thrown around is identity politics. There's a Oxford Dictionary definition for identity politics. I'll read it to you. It says, identity politics are a tendency for people of a particular religion, ethnic group, social background, gender, etc., to form exclusive political alliances, moving away from traditional broad-based party politics. Now, the thing about identity politics, is even just from the definition, is they sound pretty narrow and they sound pretty self-serving. And we can also add to that that they are usually undertaken with the goal of rectifying injustices suffered by group members because of differences or conflicts between their particular identity or misconceptions of their particular identity and the dominant identity or identities of a larger society. And the problem with identity politics, at least as I see it, is that it only divides people. I don't think that identity politics are very helpful for fixing anything. It really is about the way people think, though, more so than it is based in ethnicity or gender or religion or things like that, because there's a lot of crossover among different types of people. It's really more about the way people think. So, I mean, I guess religion definitely could be included in that definition. But there's a lot of crossover between different types of people that are involved in identity politics. Because an identity isn't necessarily exclusive to an ethnicity or gender, but more so to a way of thinking, at least in the world we live in today. Now, in Jonah's time, that was a little different. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Obviously, I'm not a very political person, so this is more of a layman's take or opinion on these kinds of things. But identity politics seems to pit people against each other and use legislation as a weapon to make war against whatever the identity politics group happens to be against. And there doesn't really seem to be an attempt to me in that to make anything better, just an attempt to make a perceived oppressor pay some kind of penance or tear apart things that are institutional or good in a culture. And it's easy to get caught up in that. Now, it's not my intention to offend anyone, but the reality is there's a lot of Christians wrapped up in that kind of identity politics as well. When you really think about it, by the definition that something like a Christian lobby group and identity politics fit together like a hand inside of a glove, and that is definitely a problem that I see with a lot of Christianity happening today. And now, I don't want to dive into too far into that because I don't want to make people too angry, and I don't want to get off track either. But as I mentioned last week, we all have a little bit of Jonah in us, and we all have a little bit of our own Nineveh somewhere in culture. But for us, it's not a physical place. It's not an ethnicity or a race of people, but it's more a worldview or an ideology that we might like to see God pour out his wrath on or rain down fire from heaven. But God has called us to do something different than that. That's not what God has called us to do. And for every one of us, there is a social issue. There is a philosophy, a worldview that is our Nineveh. And we don't like what it does. We're afraid of where it will go. We're afraid of what it might do to us. We're afraid of what it might do to our community. And we tend to not want to interact with people who are part of that group, kind of like Jonah and the Ninevites. And I have no doubt that Jonah hung out with his friends and they talked about how much they didn't like the Assyrians and how terrible they were. But when God came to Jonah and said, I want you to go to these people, Jonah wasn't having it, obviously. He didn't want to go because he was afraid of them. And he had good reason to be. But he was also afraid that God might let them off the hook if he went and told them that God saw they were evil. Now, do I know anyone who is a racist? No, I don't. Am I a racist? No, I'm not. Am I prejudiced, or do I know anyone who is prejudiced, though, against someone because of their worldview or their philosophy on life or maybe an ideology? Well, in that case, I may need to think about that a bit. But one of the things that everyone seems to struggle with today is getting past the way a person thinks, or, well, in some cases, even how they might look, but more so how they think, to the point of recognizing them as someone that is made in God's image. And it seems that we struggle with that, just having a reasonable conversation with someone, regardless of their views, seems to be a real struggle, a culture-wide, across, you know, all different groups of people today. And something that the world seems to be missing, and I think this is largely fueled by media and online interaction, is that being kind to someone or listening to what they have to say without stepping over the top of it, I guess you could say, and talking to them kindly doesn't mean you agree with them. It doesn't mean that you think like they do. And patiently listening to an opposing point of view doesn't mean you're okay with that point of view. But that seems to be a real struggle for everyone. Even among Christians, they really have a hard time with that today. And that Jonah is really welling up in everyone. I was part of an online forum recently, and it was just a discussion of a lot of different topics. But there was a book under discussion, and many people were saying, don't read this book. And I'd read the book, and it wasn't, you know, as bad as people were making it out to be. And I offered a different perspective than kind of the general consensus of the group, I suppose, and said people should be encouraged to read even if they disagree with the book. And if you don't know what it says, you shouldn't speak to it, because that only leads to speaking hearsay and then living in an echo chamber of confirmation bias. And I did say that you shouldn't speak about a book that you haven't read about. And the moderators actually kicked me out of the group. And I was kind of surprised at that. It probably didn't help that I said telling people not to read is what cults do. But nonetheless, listening to another person's point of view doesn't mean you have to adopt it. Allowing that to exist doesn't mean it's right. You don't have to agree with what a person says or does to do what God says when he says, love your neighbor. And we have a calling from God to be in the world with the message of the gospel. We're not of the world, but we're certainly in it. And we have the option, like Jonah, to live in obedience to that or to disobey that. And I sometimes think about Jonah's disobedience and how he ran and God hurls a storm on the sea. I wonder how many storms Christians bring upon themselves and their community because they are on their way to Tarshish instead of Nineveh. And as you already know, Jonah had, obviously, he decided to go the opposite direction God wanted him to go. And that was partly out of fear, partly out of loathing. He's afraid of the Assyrians, and he hated the Assyrians too. And we see some of the results of Jonah running away from what God had called him to do in verse 5. And it says, then the sailors were afraid, and each cried to his God, and they tossed the ship's cargo into the sea in order to lighten the load. And while all this is going on, it's interesting that we read Jonah had gone into the hold of the ship, down into the hull, and he was fast asleep. And as violent as this storm is, it's worth taking note that Jonah is so tired that he's sleeping through all of this and living in fear and loathing while struggling against God's will is a tiresome endeavor. And I think another possible application we can make from Jonah going down into the hold of the ship and sleeping through the storm is that Jonah's, he's pretty self-centered. And the sailors, who were pagans, were praying to their own gods and trying to get through this storm while Jonah was down in the hold, concerned about himself. And the captain, he calls on Jonah, talks to Jonah, probably shouts at Jonah and tells him to pray to his God. What are you doing? How come you're not praying? We're all praying. You should be doing the same. And the captain's prayers are not working and he's desperate. So he implores Jonah to pray to his God so that maybe they won't sink and maybe they won't lose the ship. Maybe they won't all die. And the captain's desperate. And the sailors are also acting out of desperation, and they decide to cast lots to see, you know, on whose account this storm happened, you know, who's to blame for this mess we're in. And I don't know exactly what they used to do that. I don't know what you might know about casting lots, but just a note on that, we can talk about it for a second. Casting lots is kind of similar to drawing straws in a way, or rolling dice, or flipping a coin, or like drawing names out of a hat, kind of a similar kind of process. And it's something called cleromancy. And they believed that casting lots would give them supernatural direction. And that sounds kind of strange, but it's something you actually come across in the Bible many, many times. About 80 times the Bible talks about casting lots. And it was prophesied in the Old Testament that Jesus' garments would be divided by casting lots, which is what happened at the cross. And casting lots is something that was often done in the Old Testament to make important decisions. The priestly offices in the temple were decided by casting lots. They also cast lots in the New Testament to choose a new apostle after Judas was no longer an apostle. And the word lottery and lotto has the word lot in it, kind of a drawing type thing. And you might wonder why we don't cast lots today. And I suppose the main reason we don't do that is because we should be led by the Holy Spirit. In the case of Jonah, back to Jonah, God used lots to show the sailors who the problem was. And now that they know, you might expect them to throw Jonah overboard, but they don't. They actually treat Jonah very well, and it seems they have no intention of doing otherwise. And they say to Jonah, tell us why this disaster has come upon us. You know, what's your occupation? Where do you come from? Who are you? And they're looking for something that will hopefully explain the storm and help them bring it to an end before it brings them to an end. And when I read stories like this, there's an interesting point to be made in the sailors and how they recognized that what was happening was something supernatural. They just knew that. And I think for the bulk of human history, people had a far better understanding of spiritual things. And it's only more recently that we have lost that, at least in the Western world, where everyone understands that there's definitely a spiritual side to who we are. And at this time in the history of the world, influence on culture was very, very slow. You know, whereas today, we're almost the antithesis of slow change. Social media, internet platforms form pop culture trends very quickly, and then they're replaced almost as soon as they get started. And, excuse me, and influence happens in a very fluid, in a very quick way, and people who, build a large following on social media are even referred to as influencers because they do influence culture and things like that. And culture changes almost as quickly as information travels. And the thing is that we kind of have to learn to deal with now is that that's not going away. That's a reality for us now. But the reason I say that is to make a comparison of the time when Jonah lived and how things changed and how culture changed in Jonah's time compared to ours, because today it happens so much and so quickly. But in Jonah's time, cultures were far more isolated and people lived by the same cultural norms for very, very long times. And when the sailors asked Jonah and they say to him, "Who are you? Where do you come from?" That's more than just a how you do and let's get to know each other question. They're saying, when you tell us where you come from, we're going to know a lot about you. And at the time, a person's ethnicity and location would have determined their religion, who their God was, and their worldview. You would have known a lot about someone's culture just by where they were from. And people in the same place mostly shared the same beliefs. They mostly held to the same worldview. And you were identified as one of those people. And you could assume a lot about somebody if you knew where they were from. And our culture today, again, has become almost the antithesis of that. Knowing where someone is from or knowing their ethnicity no longer really means you can assume certain things about them, even though we often still do. People are often offended when you assume things about them. And in some ways, I can kind of relate to that because when I tell people I'm a pastor, often they think they know what I'm like or they think they know who I am. And same thing with being an American. People hear me talk, my accent might is a little different than the people around me, and they assume things about me. And everyone is different and individualistic, and they identify that way. I know I do. You likely do as well. We live in an individualistic culture, and that's what culture has become. But when Jonah says, "I am a Hebrew and I fear the Lord," that would tell the sailors a lot about Jonah. That says a lot about Jonah when he says that. And I mentioned that for most of human history, worship of a deity has been part of almost everyone's life. It's only recently that that's really changed. Most people have always recognized and understood that there's a spiritual part to us, that there's an ingrained instinct to worship, I guess you could say. And it's only very recently changed that people would not recognize that. But the fact is that it hasn't really changed. Humans love to personify things. We have a little robot vacuum in our house that we named Nunu, and we put some little googly eyes on it, and it wanders around the house and does its thing. And unfortunately, recently, Nunu has passed away and is no longer with us. But we like to give things a name. We like to give things a face. We like to make them kind of like ourselves. If you have a pet, you probably have conversations with your pet. I ask the dog questions, and then I answer those questions with a funny voice for the dog. We like to personify things. And throughout the course of history, that's what people did with the things they worshipped. They personified them. That's where all the idols come from. They're personifying the things that they worship. They put a name and a face on it, like Aphrodite, for instance, from Greek mythology. She's the Greek goddess of beauty, fertility, and sexual love. And, you know, when you look at all those different deities and idols and things like that, they represent different things like weather and, whatever, success, finances. And those are things that people have always elevated to a status of worship. And over time, people have figured out that gods like Aphrodite don't exist. You know, we're smart enough to figure that out. But God created us for worship. Revelation chapter 4:11, if you'd like a reference for that. But that desire and instinct for worship remains, even though a lot of people don't put a name and a face to it anymore. And everyone is religious. Everyone worships something in some way. Many have just stopped putting a name and a face on the things they worship. And they figured out that, you know, these gods of mythology, these idols and things like that, they're empty. They're not really deity. They're not supernatural. And so they don't really exist, which is true. But then they also sometimes often make the mistake of applying that to the one who creates those things, the God of the Bible. But I've seen a trend maybe lately. I've heard some very intelligent people identify the things they worship. I heard someone say some recently that facts are my religion. I guess you could say at least he recognizes that. But what's happening there is when people worship those things and they personify what they worship is what Paul writes about when he says people worship the things that are created instead of the creator himself. And in Jonah's day, the deity people worshiped was a big part of their identity. And what people worship today is still a big part of their identity. People have just stopped personifying what they worship. They've stopped putting a personality with it and a face with it. And they've stopped giving it a name to things like love and weather and economic prosperity. But they still worship nonetheless. And what a person worships is where they find their identity. Whatever you worship, that's where you draw your identity. Whatever is highest and most and deepest to you, that's where you draw your identity. So everyone worships something. We worship the God of the Bible, the creator of all things. But God's people and sometimes other people worship other things too. And we still have to find a way to coexist with people who worship the creation instead of the creator. We have to find a way to live in the same community. And I don't think society is doing a very good job of that. That's kind of what we're talking about with the identity politics and all that kind of stuff. But with Jonah and the sailors, something to reflect on with Jonah and the sailors is the difference between the way Jonah treats people that he doesn't like or agree with and the way those people outside of his shared identity treat him. Now, Jonah, he's a very nationalistic guy. He's very proud of his heritage. He's also, most importantly, the one who represents God in all of this. And being proud of your country and shared identity is not a problem as long as it doesn't get bigger than the Lord who made your country, which in Jonah's case, it has. And what has happened to Jonah is that the terrible treatment of his nation by the Assyrians has been added to his national pride. And that's not a good combination. Jonah is interested in serving his own people And when God wants him to do something different and go somewhere else, he doesn't want to do that because what's most important to him is his national identity. And we all like to serve our own people, so to speak. And it's so much easier to interact with people who see things the same way we do. It's so much easier to interact with people who are like us. Excuse me. And for Christians, if you're a Christian and you're listening, our church is well-defined for us. That's like our identity group. But church isn't where we should draw our identity. And it's easy for us to settle into our church and serve just those people. It's easy to do that. And it's good to serve them. And we should do that. But Jesus has called us to go to people beyond that. So we can serve our fellow Christians who are part of our church, but Jesus has told us to go to the people in our community as well. And in the current cultural climate where everyone is so divided and everything's so heated and hyped up all the time of, you know, social justice and identity politics and all these different things, we can feel a little bit like Jonah being called to go to the Ninevites. And I think the best way to handle that is not to beat each other up or beat ourselves up over that or to make accusations, but to first just stop and think about it and recognize that there is at least a small part of me that is like Jonah and doesn't want to go to my own little Nineveh. And if we're forthcoming about it, we are probably afraid of what people might do to us or possibly might even do to our community, maybe our church, if they became part of it. And that's part of the reason we need to think about where we draw identity. That's very important. You know, Jonah was drawing his identity from his people, from his nation, from his people group. And we could be doing that same thing. Or we could, you know, we could be drawing it from our church. We could be drawing our identity from the fact that we're a Christian. We could be drawing our identity from our moral beliefs. And all those things can be good, but they're not where we should find our identity. Because if we do, we will desperately want to protect that identity when something threatens it, which is where Jonah is. And we'll want to exclude people outside of our faith community, outside of our identity group, if we draw our identity from our faith community. And we won't want to interact with people unless they're just like us because we will feel threatened by them. And it should be understood, of course, that there are certain beliefs that must be shared, but there are also a lot of beliefs outside of essentials that don't have to be shared. And I don't have to protect my identity when it is found in Jesus because he doesn't change and no one can do anything to him. So if my identity, my deepest identity, the one I worship is Jesus, I don't have to protect him because he doesn't need me to protect him. And so my identity is never going to feel threatened when I find it in Jesus. He is above all created things. And who can threaten that? You know, if my identity is found wholly in Jesus, nothing can change that. Nothing can affect that. Nothing can threaten that. You might remember last week I asked you as a primer to think about what ideology or social issue or something happening in culture that really gets under your skin, something that really annoys you, really bothers you. And I'd like you to bring that to mind again for a minute and think about in that thing that really bothers you, what is the underlying fear that is fueling that? Why is it that that bothers you so much? And then consider, what does that say about where you draw your identity? does that bother you? Because it's threatening who you are, because it's threatening where you draw your identity. And it may be fine. That may not be the case, but it's certainly something worth considering. Back to Joan and the sailors. The sailors were a different nationality than Jonah, but they were pretty good at Jonah. Very good compared to, you know, the way the Assyrians treated people. And I know I keep jumping back and forth between the Assyrians and the Hebrews and the sailors and all that. And what we're talking about more today is the way we think. That's where we often struggle to get along with people. But when we see how the people treated Jonah, even though, you know, he would have hated the Assyrians, they were pagans, the sailors were pagans too, but the pagans treated Jonah well. And I think something we can learn from that is that as we go out into the world and we interact with people, if someone has treated myself or my group poorly, I'm going to have to learn to find a way to reset my expectations and my preconceived notions every time I talk to someone new. Just because maybe they're, you know, identify with a certain group of people, maybe they have a certain ideology. I'm going to have to learn to reset my expectations every time I talk to someone new. Because sometimes they're not going to be difficult to deal with. And, you know, yes, there are some people who are just mean and crazy and all that stuff, but that intentional reset of preconceived notions, when I meet someone new, someone from a different way of thinking, is part of what Jesus is teaching us when he says, love God and love your neighbor, because everybody's my neighbor, regardless of their worldview. And in the first verse of our passage, you know, everyone's praying. They're all scared to death. That's what tends to happen when things are in dire straits. People tend to get spiritual. And the sailors are all praying to their own gods, and the captain yells, you know, Jonah, you should be praying to your God to help us out as well. But something you don't see Jonah actually doing is what the captain asked him to do. He doesn't pray, but he tells the sailors who he is and who he worships. And again, that's not an unusual scenario. And you often see Christians interacting with the world in a similar way. There's a lot of identifying as a Christian, a lot of claiming God is mine, making claims of moral agency, but not a lot of talking to God about it. Kind of like Jonah, you know, he doesn't actually pray until later when he ends up in the whale. It's easy to let an identity based in moral beliefs take precedence over God himself. Then when those morals are threatened, we feel threatened as well. And Jonah's identity is based in his nationality, his morality, his religious practice, which were all very, very close-knit for him. But at least right now, his identity is not found in God. And his reaction to God's call to go to Nineveh proves that. Jonah is one of God's prophets. He is very religious, but something else means more to him than God. And if an Old Testament prophet called by God can have that problem, then I don't know if anyone would be immune to it. None of us. And that's a very real danger. That's very important to think about where we draw our identity. Because if it comes from anywhere but God, it can be threatened. It can be hurt. And if you think that's not you, you're probably already in trouble. And we can be more concerned about whatever we identify with than we are with Jesus himself. And the wrong identity says, you know, I want you to be like me. If I'm going to be with you, if I'm going to interact with you, you need to be like me and think like I do. When we find our identity somewhere besides Jesus, it perverts the message of the gospel. Matter of fact, it preaches another gospel. It preaches a different Savior than Jesus if we are finding our identity in other places. And the message we communicate comes from the deepest part of who we are. It comes from where our identity comes from. And we may be able to fool people for a while. We may be able to manipulate that and hide it for a while, but eventually that comes out. And we communicate through everything we do. And we communicate through our words, our actions. Everything we say and do communicates our message. And up to this point for Jonah, he's communicating, I'm a Hebrew, I'm afraid of the Ninevites, and they don't deserve God's grace, but the Hebrews do because we're better. And Jonah is pretty self-absorbed, he's prideful. And the thing that keeps coming back up on my mind about Jonah is that he's a prophet chosen by God. And Jonah's message that he's communicating and what he's doing is not God's message. The message that he's communicating is, you're not like me, and you don't deserve God's grace. You deserve destruction. And, you know, frankly, the Ninevites do deserve it, really, but that's not what God wanted him to tell them. And God can extend mercy when destruction is deserved. He just wants Jonah to go to Nineveh and say, look, God has seen that you're evil. And for us in, you know, the New Testament time in which we live, we want to be aware of the message that we communicate to our community. We want to be careful about what we say and how we do things, because everything we say and do communicates a message. And we want to be careful not to say, I want you to be like me and to think like me, instead of saying, I want you to know Jesus. And when we find our deepest identity in Jesus, we realize that thinking like us and being like us may not be the best thing, but knowing Jesus is the best thing for everyone. And when someone finds their deepest identity in Jesus, we can share that identity with them. It's like they become our people group when they come to know Jesus. A shared identity in Jesus magnifies him and it minimizes differences. And I'm all about good fences and good neighbors, but there is a shared identity in people who know Jesus. But when we find our identity in the differences, we give ourselves permission to ignore some people, to push some people away, even in some cases, even hate some people like Jonah does. Whereas God says, all people are created in my image. And Jesus says, I want you to go to all people and be my witnesses. So think about that this week. Where is your deepest identity? Where, you know, what's that deepest part of you that you identify with? Is it Jesus or is it something else? Is it your, because there's a lot of things that we, you know, are part of our identity, but it's not our deepest identity. You know, like your family, your nation, your traditions, your church, being a Christian, being knowledgeable, being moral, being right. Those are all good things until they supersede your identity in Jesus and they supersede your obedience to him. And that was Jonah's problem. He identified with something that superseded his identity in God. And that's why he is on the run. And we'll see where he ends up next week. And I'll look forward to seeing you again then.
Thank you for taking the time to listen today. Let me know what you think in the comments. Please consider subscribing and sharing this with someone who might find it helpful.
Oh, that's good.